This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Trevor Chappell.
Aaron Lewis Fitzgerald is a clothes mending expert and the author of Modern Mending. Aaron, can you mend a broken heart?
Yes.
Jeez, you
I'll
could.
Try really hard. I'll mend anything. I'll mend bad haircuts. Like, it doesn't matter. It's, you know.
Have you always loved mending things?
I have, but I didn't realize that I had. It was in me, but I didn't necessarily know it. And it wasn't something I ever talked about or that people talked about for a long time. So I just didn't realize until much later.
So is it fixing or mending or a bit of both? In that, were you one of those kids that would like to fix things up as well?
No, it's funny because I have friends from, you know, who knew me back in childhood and my teenage years, and they always remember me as being really crafty and artistic, but I don't remember that about myself. So there's probably a lot of things that were, you know, true about me back then, but I didn't necessarily see it because I was focused on other things. And it's kind of hard to know yourself, really,
so
at that age.
Does that mean that maybe you just loved it so much that you just did it and it was just part of your normal life that you were just out there fixing things and mending things?
I think that's exactly it. And I think there's a lot of aspects to it that kind of fit my personality, like the fact that I'm quite stubborn and don't like to give up on things. That's part of it. But there's also, you know, like a creative element. There's a problem solving element. There's like an investigative element. There's a lot of things that come together that really, you know, give me those endorphins that I love.
Do you think that attitudes are changing towards mending and that we may have had a bit of a throwaway culture maybe 10, 15 years ago, but attitudes are changing towards mending?
A lot of attitudes are changing. It's not everyone. There's definitely a huge change that I've noticed in terms of people thinking about sustainability and the environment, but they don't necessarily know what it's all about. So for a long time when I would tell people what I do, they would give me these looks that were like kind of, you know, they would scrunch up their faces and try to look polite and be like, oh, that's nice. But until you actually see what's possible and you see that mending can be beautiful or creative, or it can be all kinds of different things than what you might imagine, that's when they start to get excited about it and understand it. But there's a lot of people who still aren't quite there because they haven't seen what's possible.
It's interesting because on a lot of the social media platforms and a lot of the things like TikTok and some of those other platforms, there are mending tips and there are mending things on there, and they're very intricate and very, very clever.
Yes. And you know, they're now actually like mending has become kind of a clickbait thing. So I've even seen quite a few books that have come out in the past year that have mending or repair, the word in the title, and there's no actual mending or repair content inside. So they know that people are interested and they want to know more, and it's become a bit of a thing. But hopefully, you know, people start to realize it's not just a fad. It's actually like a really important thing that's going to stick around for a long time.
And for those of us that aren't menders, I've noticed also that there are starting to be an emphasis on people being able to take things to. So if you're not a mender yourself, there are people who are seamstresses, there are people who will do your alterations that will fix up your jeans out there doing that sort of work as well.
Yes, and I'm definitely a big supporter of supporting your local alterations business or your local mender.
Oh, because we use one of those, and they do a great job on my jeans because I've always got holes in the knees of my jeans, and it's wonderful getting them fixed. Jenny's a good one. Hello, Jenny.
I'm an old-fashioned one. Modern mending passes me by, I'm sorry, but I am so glad to hear that you are promoting fix it and keep it rather than throw it all away. Because I just do needle and thread. I put on patches. I have a cardigan of my mother's who died many years ago. And it's more patches than it's good wool, old fashioned Australian wool. And it's worth keeping, not just because of mum, but because it's warm.
I mean, look, there's an advocate for you, Erin.
Sounds like my kind of friend.
Is it the thing though, and Jenny, why do you think there's a difference between old-fashioned mending and modern mending, or is it just the same thing, or it's just spoken of differently, do you think, Jenny?
Well, I would like to hear what Erin's methods are, because all I know is what I was taught as a child. Thread your needle, tie a knot in one end, and get sewing.
Erin?
For me, it's a mixture. I mean, modern mending is a nice sounding title, but when I was thinking of it, I was thinking it does incorporate visible creative mending. It also incorporates invisible mending. But I think mainly for me, it's about the clothes that we wear now, because a lot of the vintage and classic mending books that I love, they don't include jeans. They don't include t-shirts. They don't include, thin machine knit jumpers and cardigans and things that you see now. So it's about incorporating all of those things and not just mending things that are beautiful and hand knit or, you know, hand sewn or that type of thing. But I do a lot of invisible mending as well. And some of the techniques that I use are hundreds of years old, and some of them I invented myself, or I think I did. Nothing's new.
Is it wonderful? Do you still explore, and do you still discover new things, Erin?
I do. And I think this, especially when people give me their clothes to mend, quite often by the time they get to me, there are so many things that have gone wrong. It's not just a simple hole. And so I often have to combine techniques as well in a way that I've never done before. It really makes me think about, you know, what's the best approach for this. And quite often I have to do a few things. So it might not necessarily be a new technique on its own, but it might be a new combination of things or new materials.
Because sometimes when you take a look at some of the things that are on Instagram where people are doing, especially doing invisible mending, when you look at it, are they really difficult? Because I see some of those things and go, how can you possibly do that? It would take you about 15 hours to do it, be able to achieve that.
Yes, and it does take 15 hours. So when I was taking mending commissions, I've stopped because I'm a new mum now and I don't have time. But when I was taking them, I had a rule that I would only offer visible mending to clients. And that allowed me to be creative. And it also weeded out a certain type of client who was not necessarily interested in what I do, it kind of seems like the more invisible they want it, the more of a perfectionist they might be, or it's just not fun. We'll put it that way. But I have taken a couple of jobs that I've done invisibly, and it's really hard to see. I've had to get a magnifying lamp. I got new glasses. And the other thing is, when you start mending invisibly, if you need to remove your stitches, for example, and redo a section, sometimes it's really hard to find the stitches you need to remove, and you can end up making more of a mess than was there originally. Like it's really like an eye straining kind of thing. So if you have good eyesight, great, go for it. If you are someone who loves, you know, perfection, or you like to do things really, really well, there's all kinds of reasons why you might want to try invisible mending, but it does definitely take practice to get to a point, where it really is seamless and you can do it well. And so I think visible mending, for me, part of the reason I'm so excited about it is because it offers an opportunity for anyone to jump in and get started. And it's a lot easier and usually a lot faster.
It's interesting when you say commissions. Is that because if there may be things that are particularly significant and important to people that they want to have restored, which means that it will take time and it will take work for it to be done invisibly?
That's part of it. It's also, I've kind of created this little situation for myself where I am known for mending and I do post my work on Instagram. So there's kind of like a level that I have to attain because I know people are watching, and that just puts the pressure on. But it is, you know, I have my own standards for my work as well. But usually the people who come to me, the item is something that they really, really love. It's not necessarily an heirloom, but it's something that they care about. It's something that fits well. It's something that they want to keep wearing. So it's important to them.
There's going to be all of these people out there that got grotty old T-shirts that nobody else likes that have got holes in them and go, oh, I can finally restore it and bring it back.
Yes, but I won't. I will help you learn how to do it, but I am unavailable. I'm sorry.
A text here asking, I'll go to calls in a second, so if you can hang on 1 minute. A text saying, do you mend socks?
Yes. Yes, I do. And I love it. And socks are the thing that I recommend for people just starting. Because it's so funny because I was watching my daughter and she's just learning how to like stand and to, you know, grab onto furniture and like the first steps of walking. And while she's doing it, she's like moaning and crying because she hates it. And then every time she realizes like what she's achieving, she starts to get happy and clap and delighted. And it's just so funny going from like, oh, I hate this to, oh my God, this is amazing. And I was laughing at her. And then I realized, oh my God, that's how I feel when I'm mending. And it's like, sometimes I think, oh my gosh, this is so like, this is not going to work. It's the worst thing I've ever done. And then I see it and I'm like, these are the greatest socks of all time. And I think people just need to realize, like, if you, it's hard when we learn new things and you're not just instantly going to be, you know, amazing at it and an expert. So socks are perfect because there's something you wear and wear out all the time. And if, you know, you just put your shoes on, nobody has to see your handiwork. So it's really low pressure, it's low stakes, and you can enjoy the process and get better at it.
Does that also mean that we should move away from the belief that you only should repair or need to repair things that are worth a lot of money and not necessarily just because it needs repairing?
Oh, I will repair fast fashion. I will repair. I've repaired underpants, you know, like it's a, not all the underpants, but some of them are worth saving. And I don't have personally, I don't have any sort of rules about it needs to be expensive or valuable to be worth repairing. I think if you have something, if we're talking about clothing, if you have something that fits you well and you love the style, you know, it's worth doing as long as there's enough fabric that's strong enough to hold stitches, it can be done.
Hmm. Andreas, hello.
I repair, been repairing socks for years, but jeans are easy with holes in the knees, Trevor.
Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me that you don't do it. You have to get someone else to do it. But if you've got an old, really, really old pair of jeans that are beyond redemption, cut a piece out of them and just sew that over the hole in the knee.
I get that. It's just that we take them to somebody to do it because she does it far better and I don't have to have a big patch. And that's why I do that. But I get you. And good on you for repairing socks. I want to talk to Jarrah, who repairs his socks as well. Hello, Jarrah.
Hey, how you going?
You do your socks?
Yeah, Pat reckons it's an army thing, and it probably is because that's where I learned it. But yeah, no, I darn me socks. I've got another one I'll tell you in a minute. But yeah, no, I reckon darn socks. My wife goes, absolute apex. Just throw them out and get new ones. I go, no, I'm going to darn them. And I do it, and they're heaps better because they're stronger and your toes don't go through them again. They last forever. They are absolutely fantastic once you've darned them.
Is there an art to darning socks, Jarrah?
Yes. It doesn't. I mean, it doesn't have to be artistic.
Sorry, go on, Aaron. No, I'll go back to Jarrah.
It doesn't have to be artistic, but yes, there is a bit of an art to it.
And yep. What is it? What other things you do, Jarrah?
Got to go one way then the other when you're darning your socks and make sure you do it right.
Yeah. Okay.
The other thing was my daughter hit a kangaroo and the headlight in her car, right, we had to repair it I chose to repair it for her, and the headlight was $1,800 and it only broken the little mounts off, you know, where you screw it down.
Yeah.
So I got a soldering iron and just melted the plastic back together. And I mean, that was probably 2 years ago. It hasn't broken again. She's still driving the car around. And, yeah, saved $1,800. So, you
know. Mending always doesn't matter what you mend, Aaron.
You know, that reminds me of a story. I used to drive the cutest car you can imagine. It was a 2-seater smart car with a convertible top. And someone came and slashed the soft top on my car, and I was just devastated. I took it to get an insurance claim, and they said they were going to have to write off the car and basically, like, you know, crush it up because the cost to replace the soft top was going to be more than the car was worth. And I said, thank you, no. And then I got out my leather needle and thread and ended up stitching it and using a waterproof material that I got from a saline shop and fixed it myself. But it was the hardest repair I've ever done. It's anything's possible, though, you know?
Hello, David.
Hello, Trevor and your guest. Well, I muck around with clothing, and I don't mind you with jeans, Trevor.
Hmm.
I thought it was very much more expensive to buy them with the holes in them, but that's a different matter. But the thing is, I want to give you a tip, all the listeners. I've for many years fixed many different things, but when my son was about 10 years old, we were making model aeroplanes and remote control flying them, and he showed me actually, and then I've taken on this. When you're using super glue, and if you just use it, because it does stick things very well,
yeah,
and you get things to stick, and they seem like they're fixed, but they don't. A lot of things don't last. Like, for example, spectacle frames, or as you know, wood with model airplane frames if you stack it a little bit. But what you do, and there's a tip for everyone, just pull off about a centimetre of tissue paper. Anything will do. Toilet paper will do. Once you've just got the two surfaces stuck together, or you can work out your own technique, get a few, about 3 to 4 strips of tissue and impregnate the tissue with the super glue.
I say to do it that way. Super glue, how are you with super glue and gluing things, Erin, or is that just cheating?
Oh, gosh, no. When I was writing my book, I actually took the photographs from my book as well. I was the hand model, and I took all the process photos. And I kept having broken fingernails, and I actually had to glue my fingernails back together before I did the photo shoots each night. And so I was using the same technique he just mentioned. I was using a tiny bit of teabag paper and nail polish and gluing it back. And I did use super glue some nights as well. So, yeah, I was gluing my own fingernails just to get the book done. But I love glue.
So you'd like to mend not just clothing, so it's outside clothing as well?
We do. Like, in my house, we always try to repair or mend something if possible. It's not always possible, and it's not always practical, but there's definitely a repair-first mentality here.
It could be, so if the handle comes off a mug, if anything like that happens, then it's the first thing you do is glue it together before you think about chucking it out.
When I bought my favorite mug, I looked at it and I thought, this is going to look so awesome when it's repaired. Like, I will love you and repair you forever. So I'm going back to that stage. Like, when things are actually acquired and come into my house, I'm thinking, ooh, this is a winner. You know, I'm looking forward to repairing this one day.
So tell me about your favorite mug.
It's covered in dots, hand-painted dots. And it's just really, there's something about it. Like, it's very charming and beautiful, but it's black and white, and it was handmade by a local artist in Victoria. And I just love it. It makes me happy to drink tea out of it.
So will you not only repair and mend the things that you have, but will you also repair and mend things you will find? So do you look at things, will go, okay, well, that's not so flash now, but after I finish with it, it's going to be a cracker?
Absolutely. And I've also had things that I've purchased that maybe weren't quite right. And instead of taking them back or returning them or trying to sell them, I actually just decide, well, I'm just going to fix this a little bit. So I count like what I call hacks in that whole universe of repair as well, making something better to fit your needs and keep it going rather than just, you know, tossing it.
We'll come back to that hack idea in a minute. Tony, hello.
Hey, g'day, Trevor and Erin. Thanks very much for taking my call. Look, my mother was a great seamstress, and unfortunately, my dear wife, who tries to repair my work clothes, is not so successful. It's very hard to find someone to be able to do these repairs now. And although I'm a, a sort of fabricator by trade, and I do a lot of repairs in my workshop on my farm, but at the end of the day, I'm not a seamstress, and I'd like to find someone to do it, but unfortunately, there's not too many people around. And also, you don't see too many sewing machines for sale. You see TV sets for sale, but not sewing machines.
You know, I've got a text here that says, I recently bought a sewing machine at a garage sale. It's paid for itself many times over, says Moe Matt. Hey, Tony, how hard have you looked to find a seamstress or someone to do that work?
Oh, look, I haven't gone to a lot of trouble. I know, I'm near Junee, and our biggest regional centre is Wagga Wagga, and I think there's a little shop in Wagga that I haven't chased up yet to be able to do that, to do the repairs. But look, it's a dying art, and I think I'm with Erin because I believe that some of the younger generation now are thinking about repairing things rather than just throwing them away.
Tony, I reckon you would find that there are a whole stack of people that are operating out of homes all around Wagga Wagga that are doing repairs and not necessarily in shops.
Probably need to do a bit of a Google up or something or whatever.
I'm not... Contact your local community house. Contact your local council. Community houses would be a good place to have a look to start with as well, Erin.
Also, I'm thinking of repair cafes. I know Australia has at least 50 repair cafes or similar initiatives. A lot of them haven't been operating this year because of COVID, but some of them are, and it's worth checking for repair cafe on their website or asking the local community center or your council, is there a local repair initiative? And even if they can't help you fix your clothes, they can, they'll be in the know and they'll be able to point you in the right direction of a local professional who can help you.
Because there are plenty of people operating out of homes, Erin, and not necessarily out of shops too.
Absolutely. And I found when I was doing research in my early days, I was thinking, why aren't repair people promoting themselves? Like, maybe they're just really bad at marketing. And, you know, what if we could just help them and we could get them a better web presence, get them on social media, get them to advertise their stuff? And what I found is that a lot of them are working from home or they're doing multiple jobs and they have more work than they can handle. And that's enough. And they don't need any more. So it's kind of a thing where, in, you know, we don't really have government support for those types of repairs as an industry. It's really scattered. So people are just doing it on their own and getting by, and they don't necessarily have the money to pay for staff or apprentices or anything like that, or to try to scale up. They're just managing exactly what they have right now. So they're not really interested in necessarily promoting to get more work, because the amount of effort that would take is not really worth it.
And that's why when you find a really good person, as Kath and I have, you just don't tell anybody about them.
Right, and you give them cake, and you make them happy so that they keep doing it forever.
Jason, hello.
In 2018, a member of the men's shed I belong to, he and his partner, went on a one-month tour of Victoria, and they planned their itinerary. He was visiting men's sheds. She was visiting CWA venues. They both had a fantastic time, and when they finished up at the end, she was more interested in the men's sheds and he was more interested in the CWA, and it was a brilliant holiday for them.
What a terrific thing to do together.
Yeah, I thought it was a fantastic piece of togetherness and the planning.
What a great thing to do. Jason, thank you for telling us about it. Erin, because it's interesting, are we starting to see men, and we've heard from Jarrah and all from Andreas, men darning their socks. Is it necessarily a gender thing anymore?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I could just chat on about that all day, but I won't. I think I've really tried to unpack that and figure out why it's still like that. And what I can gather is that a lot of it has to do with what you learn as a child and what you are confident doing. So, for example, if you were taught as a child to sew or to work with wood or to do those types of things, then you've got that early confidence and you start to do more of those projects. So in my house, if we've got something that's broken that involves wood, for example, that'll end up in my husband's pile. And if it's textiles, it's usually me. But I did teach him to darn his own socks, because I think everybody should darn their own socks.
Well, I mean, they're just little things, like just putting buttons on shirts and those little things that we can all do. I mean, we may do it to varying abilities, but they're still done.
Right. And I taught him how to hem his pants as well. And I think for me, the sort of deciding factor is this something that you have to do a lot of? If it's a one-off, you know, that's fine. And I have things that I take to my local tailor and have him do that are difficult for me to do. He can do much better and faster. But I think if you're always having holes in your socks, if you're always needing to take up the hems in your pants, for example, then it's time to go, you know what? I'm going to learn how to do this. I can do this.
And if you like it enough, because if it's that shirt that you like and you're sick of not having that button on there, you go, well, I've just got to do it. So you just do it.
Well, yes, ideally one that you like, but the prices that we pay for clothing now are not at all representative of how much work goes into them and what the raw materials are worth. I read somewhere that for every t-shirt, like let's say a t-shirt costs $10 that you get at Kmart, which you really shouldn't buy a $10 t-shirt, but for argument's sake, the person who actually sews your t-shirt makes about 10 cents. For that $10. And, you know, if you start to look at all your clothes that way, I was looking at a pair of jeans that were advertised for $99. And I started to break it down and go, hold on, all the things that go into that, how is that even paying the people who make these fairly? And the answer is it's not. We're getting used to really warped prices. So for me, mending not only is about saving the things you love, but it's also honoring the people who put all the work into the clothes originally and not just throwing out what they've done and the labor that they've put in, you know? So it's like a whole cycle.
Oh, a question. I have a very fine knit woolen jumper that has been chewed by a moth right at the front. Is it possible to mend?
Yes, absolutely. It's probably the number one thing that my students have in class. You can use darning, you can use needle felting. There's all kinds of different embroidery techniques that you can use as well with something on the back. So that's one of the options that has the most choices. It's very exciting creatively.
Is it one of those things that you can YouTube? Can you go onto, like, type it into a search engine and you'll come up with something?
Yes, but I think like anything that you search on the internet these days, we have too much choice.
Yep.
And so finding good quality information is really difficult. There are lots of people who will put things on YouTube that will, like I was saying before, with books that have the word mending or repair on the cover and no content on the inside. There's a lot of stuff that will say how to fix a hole, but it's not necessarily how to fix your hole or correct for your circumstances. So I prefer books in that case, or I've got my Facebook group, Modern Mending Club, where you can crowdsource answers. So if you're on Facebook and you're someone who needs like individual advice, but yeah, for me, books are the way to go. And I consult my oracles in my bookshelf whenever I get stuck.
I do like wisdom of the elders and wisdom of others. So that's the sort of thing that you could be able to get from that Facebook site.
Yes, you can. And there's people who are professional menders in there or professional cobblers. And there's people who've just done their first mend ever and will just cheer you on and say, oh, my gosh, that's amazing what you've done. So, there's all kinds in there, but at least you can get different ideas. So if you get stuck and you're like, I'm not really sure what's the right way to go about this, that's a really good way to do it, is just to ask the people around the world what they would do.
So that Facebook site?
Modern Mending Club. It's a Facebook group.
There you go. That person there that sent that text in, pop on there and have a little look. It's Taya. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for this great program. I'm so inspired. I have some gloves. I won't mention the brand, but they're made out of very fine wool. And it feels like some modern product. It's like plastic bottle jackets from outdoor shops. You know, it's something a bit different. They're not your average wool. So I wondered how I could mend the fingertips, because every other part of them are still good, but they're really so holy at the moment, they're not working. And I'm just on the cusp of thinking I have to buy some more, and they're quite expensive.
Oh, gloves can definitely be repaired. Darning is usually my first choice for gloves, for fabric ones, but I've also seen people make little sort of fingertip patches, if that makes sense. It's kind of hard to explain on radio, but it's definitely possible. And if you want to try to repair them yourself, you can use the handle of a wooden spoon from your kitchen, or anything kind of that shape, to hold the shape of your finger while you're actually mending, so you can make sure that you get the proper curve as it would normally be. But there's lots of options for gloves.
Do you know, with gloves though, and things that are, well, I'll come back to you, Taya. Do you have to use wool again? If you're doing woolen gloves, do you have to use wool, or can you use cotton?
Have to? Well, I mean, there's sort of like a rule of thumb. In general, it's best to mend things made from animal fibers, so like wool and cashmere, etc., with more animal fibers. And I prefer to mend things made from natural fibers, like cotton and linen, with more cotton and linen. But that's mainly due to the washing, because cotton and wool wash very differently. And so you don't want the materials that you're mending with to shrink at a different rate to the garment that you're mending. So sometimes it's an aesthetic preference as well. Like wool will more closely match the wool garment and it'll look better aesthetically, like it's meant to be. But you don't actually have to use the same materials. It depends on the circumstance.
But I would, because when I was saying that, this is probably through my ignorance, I guess you would be able to find very fine wool that would be able to fit through a needle hole to be able to do the darning.
Yes, and you can also find needles that have very large eyes to accommodate. So there's all kinds of different mending wool. There's a whole world out there.
Does that help, Taya?
It does. Just a quick question, though. I have recalled from my very early childhood that my mum had a wooden mushroom-shaped thing that she used for darning socks and things. But with gloves, Erin, they're just a little bit trickier because I've got very tiny hands. So the actual pointy bits where the tips need to be stretched, as you say, to darn or to attach the little patches is so tiny. I wondered if it's possible to even buy something these days that actually, you know, you can poke into the glove to darn the actual or patch the actual pointy.
Did you hear what Erin said, though, about the wooden spoon handle?
Yes, I did. It's probably a bit too big for my little tiny.
Yeah. This is when you go on a scavenger hunt around your house. So you start looking. This is my favorite thing to do, where I'm like, what looks like the size of a finger that I could fit inside the glove? And seriously, you'll have something in your house. It might be a pen. It might be, like, you would be really surprised. Just go on a hunt, especially in your kitchen. In that weird junk drawer in your kitchen, there will probably be something that will actually fit in there. So the main thing is that you just want something sturdy and solid. There are all kinds of things you can use in place of darning mushrooms if you're not darning a glove. Darning mushroom is something that I sell in my shop, and there's all different kinds. Sometimes the handle of a wooden darning mushroom will be thin enough to do this, but it sounds like not in this case. But you can also improvise. You can use an orange to hold the shape of your foot when you're darning socks. You can use, you know, some people use a light globe. I've heard of students at a university here using potatoes. So it's really just, you know, like, just have a hunt in your house and see what you can find that's sturdy and it'll do the job. And you might be really surprised there will be something there. So you can use something that's never been used to darn with before, and it's totally fine.
Taya, thank you. I was just thinking of things that are in my top drawer, you know, or in the second drawer, you know, the second drawer where it's just full of all sorts of crap.
Yes.
Chopsticks we've got in our second drawer, and they work really well, wouldn't they?
Possibly, yeah.
Andy joins us. Hello, Andy.
Oh, good morning. Really enjoying the feedback and show. A spin-off from repairing is it reduces waste. With our local tip, is just mind-boggling what, one, people throw away, and two, how it's been clogged up, and that's probably tips everywhere.
That's Erin's thing, Andy. I'll come back to her on that in a minute. What else did you want to say, Andy?
Just after the bushfires, there was we got people coming through and cleaning up and taking away good machinery and stuff that looked terrible, but as a fellow that, if you've got the right equipment and set up a shed in your backyard even, that it's amazing what you can repair, restore, and learn from the process. There's some things that look repairable, and I think metals, they seem to deteriorate really badly in the bushfire, and after that they fall apart. But had just a lot of unsuccessful efforts. One learns from it, and it's all good, and really enjoying your show.
Andy, thank you. There are two things out of that. Firstly, I know that you want to talk about the importance of recycling, and also it reduces waste, Erin.
Well, actually, I see recycling as a last resort. So it's not, you know, yes, do it if you have to, but I'm more about refuse and reuse and maintain and repair and all of that. And I used to run a social enterprise called Bright Sparks, where we were reviving and repairing electrical appliances to keep them from landfill. And when I did that job, I saw just the sheer volume of things that people wanted to get rid of. And that's when it really changed for me. That's when I really started thinking about the environment, because it's not just about the one thing that you're considering, should I mend this? It's about all of us with our homes full of stuff that we don't want or need anymore, that maybe we didn't really purchase with longevity in mind. And when you start to see the collective power of all of our consumption, you know, then it starts to make me go, no, I'm not going to buy a new thing. I'm going to keep the thing that I already have and love going, not just because I want to keep that thing in circulation, but because I don't want to start buying any new stuff or bringing it into my house, you know.
Robin wants to talk about darning and fixing socks. Hello, Robin.
Hello. Yeah, I have a darning mushroom for socks, but I also have a little tiny bone sewing item that is for darning gloves. Well, to put in the glove finger.
And is it specifically made for that?
Tiny little. It's a tiny little piece made of bone because I collect sewing, you know, old-fashioned sewing things. And it's a little bone thing. It's got a little, like a tiny mushroom handle, top, so you can put up a glove. Yeah, just wow. Darn it.
And do you enjoy repairing as well as collecting, Robin?
I do. I do indeed. Yeah, I'm a great keeper and repairer. I have jewellery. One day I'm going to repair. Da 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 da. It goes on and on. and young people, just why don't you just chuck it out, Robin, and get something new? I said no. It's a joy to see something come back to life. Yeah.
Oh, the joy of, and you can hear it in the voice, Erin.
Yes, and I was just thinking that too. That's the thing that, you know, I can just prattle on about why we should do it, but that's no fun. Like, it's actually really, really fun to repair things, and it's fun to achieve something and see what you've actually done. You know, there's, especially if you work at, like, I don't know, I've had plenty of jobs with, that were desk jobs where you wonder at the end of the day, what have I actually accomplished today? Where has the time gone? Whereas when you repair something, you know, you do have tangible results and you can see what you've achieved and you're learning stuff, you're getting something fixed. It's just really the main reason that I do this is for the endorphins.
We're about a minute away from the news, literally. Erin, do you think that there should be more work done in schools in assisting kids to learn the idea of fixing?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I think just basic skills, like, you know, learning how to sew on a button or to hand sew so people aren't afraid of needle and thread. I really would love to see that come back to schools.
It's been a pleasure as always, Erin. Can you just tell us what your Facebook site is again for people that are interested in mending?
The Facebook group is Modern Mending Club, but my website is modernmending.com. That's the best place to find me, and that's where I've got all my mending supplies and my book.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Erin Lewis-Fitzgerald is a clothes mending expert and the author of Modern Mending.